Listen local.
Live from the WJFF studios in Liberty, New York, this is Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. On today's show, on the eve of the election, new challenges to Pennsylvania's voters' mail-in ballot applications targeting overseas voters. Thousands of challenges have been filed in 14 counties, many by right-wing activists trying to get ballots disqualified, falsely claiming Pennsylvania's living abroad are not eligible. Carter Walker from VoteBeat PA is here live with the latest. One Small Step, it's the initiative that brings strangers with different political beliefs together for a conversation, not to debate politics, but to get to know each other as people. And on election eve, we'll hear from two more folks who participated here at Radio Catskill, Camille and Brett. Plus, local economic perspective from local author and economist James B. Huntington. But first, the news from NPR.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Corva Coleman. After months of speeches and rallies, this is the final full day of campaigning for Vice President Kamala Harris and former President Donald Trump. NPR's Deepa Shivaram reports Harris will spend the day crisscrossing the swing state of Pennsylvania.
Harris will campaign in Pittsburgh and make stops in Allentown and Reading, which both have a large Puerto Rican population. It's a group whose vote Harris has been trying to court since a comedian made disparaging remarks about the island at a recent event for former President Trump. Several celebrities will join Harris throughout the day, including Lady Gaga, Fat Joe, and Katy Perry. Harris will end the night with a rally in Philadelphia late Monday before heading back to Washington. She'll be at Howard University, her alma mater, on election night. Deepa Shivaram, NPR News, Detroit.
Donald Trump will visit three swing states today, North Carolina, Pennsylvania, and he will end his day in Grand Rapids, Michigan. He held a rally yesterday in Lititz, Pennsylvania. Trump again raised false claims about election interference, including in his loss in 2020.
We had the safest border in the history of our country the day that I left. I shouldn't have left. I mean, honestly, because we did so well.
Trump also talked about being behind bulletproof glass after the assassination attempts against him, but he also said any potential new attacker would have to shoot through the, quote, fake news to get him, and that he didn't mind that. Trump's campaign says the president was saying the press was protecting him, and that he was looking out for the media's welfare. The Israeli government has officially told the United Nations that it will cut ties with the UN agency that provides aid to Palestinians. The UN is warning this could have devastating consequences for Palestinians living in Gaza and the West Bank. Israel says several Palestinian UN staff members participated in the October 7th attack on Israel last year. The UN dismissed several staff members. Stocks opened lower this morning at the start of a week of big decisions. NPR's Scott Horsley reports the Dow Jones Industrial Average slipped about 170 points in early trading.
Federal Reserve officials gather in Washington this week, and the central bank is widely expected to cut its benchmark interest rate by a quarter percentage point. The announcement will come on Thursday, 2 days after voting ends in the presidential contest. Striking machinists at Boeing are casting votes today on a tentative contract to end their walkout, now in its eighth week. The proposal calls for 38% pay raises over the next 4 years. OPEC and its allies are extending caps on oil production through the end of the year. The news gave a modest lift to crude oil prices, but retail gasoline prices in the U.S. continue to fall. AAA says the average price of regular gas is now $3.10 a gallon, 32 cents lower than this time last year. Scott Horsley, NPR News, Washington.
And you're listening to NPR News from Washington. Voters in a record number of states are weighing in on ballot measures that could enact far-reaching changes to how their elections are run. This includes key swing states such as Arizona and Nevada. NPR's Ashley Lopez has more.
Half a dozen states across the country are considering swapping out their party primaries with nonpartisan primary contests. That's where all candidates, regardless of political party, appear on the same ballot and some number of candidates move on to the general election. Advocates for nonpartisan primaries say closed nominating contests often exclude unaffiliated and independent voters, which they argue leads to more extreme candidates. Currently, 5 states in the U.S. have nonpartisan primaries. If these ballot measures pass this election cycle, that number would more than double. Ashley Lopez, NPR News.
Hurricane watches are posted in the Cayman Islands for a tropical disturbance brewing in the Caribbean Sea. It could soon become Tropical Storm Rafael. The National Hurricane Center says the storm could pour heavy rain on parts of Florida and the southeast later this week. Officials in Barcelona, Spain, say about 6 inches of rain have fallen there today. More is coming. This is coming as the eastern city of Valencia recovers from deadly flooding last week that killed more than 200 people. Authorities in Indonesia say that at least 10 people have died after several volcanic eruptions on the island of Flores today. The volcano released hot ash high into the air that burned down several houses. Rescuers say people are trapped in the rubble. I'm Corva Coleman, NPR News.
Support for NPR comes from NPR stations. Other contributors include Insperity, providing HR services and technology, from payroll, benefits, and HR compliance to talent development. Learn more at Insperity.com/HR Matters. And the Doris Duke Foundation.
Welcome back to Radio Catskill. I'm Tim Bruno, and we are on election eve. Thousands of mail-in ballots across Pennsylvania have been challenged in many instances by right-wing activists in what the state calls a bad faith coordinated effort, accusing voters of being ineligible based on their address or voter registration status. At least 14 counties have received challenges seeking to invalidate mail ballots, and each challenge cites evidence showing the voter had moved overseas or had submitted a change of address request with the U.S. Postal Service. Neither scenario, however, necessarily makes a voter ineligible to cast a ballot in Pennsylvania. Here to tell us more and more on what's going on in this crucial swing state is Carter Walker, the Pennsylvania reporter for VoteBeat. VoteBeat is the nonprofit news organization reporting on voting access and election administration across the U.S. Good morning, Carter. Oh, Carter, there you are. Hi.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Hey, thanks for being here. So what's going on with this challenge? This was a result of a deadline, I guess, on Friday?
Yeah, that's right. So under state law, if somebody wants to challenge the mail ballot application of a voter, they have to do it by 5 p.m. on Friday. And in the last week, we had started to see some challenges to mail ballot applications trickling in around the southeast part of the state, mostly targeting Democratic voters. And then on Friday, what we saw was kind of a really big increase in these challenges all over the state. And this time they were targeting military overseas voters, rather. First batch of challenges was making the argument that, okay, this person has submitted a change of address request to the U.S. Postal Service, and that doesn't match the address on their mail ballot application. So therefore, given county, you need to reject this person's ballot application and therefore the ballot that they got as a result of that application. The ones dealing with overseas voters is the same premise, basically, just that the voter is living overseas. Most folks here in the U.S. probably won't be familiar with this process, but for military voters and U.S. citizens living abroad, say you retire down to Panama or something, there's a law that still enables you to vote in U.S. elections, and they are challenging those ballots on the premise that that person has moved out of the country and are no longer registered in Pennsylvania because Pennsylvania only permits residents to register to vote, obviously. But these overseas voters are kind of an exception to that under federal law.
So the Department of State has already called these bad faith efforts. Who's behind all this?
Well, it's not clear exactly who's behind all of the challenges, but where we have been able to learn the names of challengers, it does appear to be linked to two groups that have been operating here in PA for some time, the Election Research Institute and PA Fair Elections. These are two right-wing activist groups, both led by a woman named Heather Honey, who I believe we might have spoken with your voters, I'm sorry, your listeners about before. They've been able to confirm that people associated with those groups have filed challenges in 3 or 4 counties. So it certainly looks like they are involved with it.
And did Heather Honey say anything, or have other organizations that are behind any of this made any public comment?
Yeah, Heather Honey did not respond to me, but one of the people who was filing challenges in Lycoming County was the attorney for the Elections Research Institute who works with Heather Honey. She denied that this was an organized effort by that group. And I should note that the Philadelphia Inquirer and Lancaster Online also reported that PA Fair Elections denied that it was an organized effort by their group either, though again, was able to confirm that three counties where these challenges had been submitted, they were by members of PA Fair Elections. And in one of the counties that has already had a hearing on these challenges, Chester County, the woman who submitted those challenges said at the hearing this past Friday that she was working in coordination with PA Fair Elections. So it's still a little unclear, and there needs to be some more reporting on who filed these challenges exactly and how the information in these challenges came together. But at least at this point, it looks like PA Fair Elections and the Elections Research Institute are at least somewhat, if not or tangentially involved.
How does this work in Pennsylvania if you're challenged, if your ballot is challenged? And in this instance, what's the process?
Yeah, so the process will be that the county has to hold a hearing on the challenge within a week of the challenge being made. Now, a lot of counties hadn't scheduled those hearings by the time I spoke with them, but many are already scheduling them for after Election Day. The challenged voter can come and testify or submit evidence on their behalf that they are eligible and the county should reject the petition. And we did see a lot of people in Chester County do that at the hearing on Friday, and they were quite upset about their votes being challenged. I recall particularly, and I quoted my story, a woman who she moves around frequently because her husband is in the military. So she's going around to different military bases, but the spouses of military voters are still allowed to vote at their last address in the state. So, you know, she was following the law, was very upset that her vote was being called into question and testified at the hearing. And there were a number of other folks who testified, and the attorney for Chester County called out several deficiencies in the evidence presented by the challenger there, who ended up withdrawing a lot of those challenges when faced with the realization that the analysis that led her to challenge those voters was not quite sound.
The ACLU sent a letter to all 67 counties in Pennsylvania on Sunday. What did they say to these counties?
Yeah, they're saying that these challenges are legally deficient. They don't meet the standards under this section of the law for creating these challenges. They particularly point to the fact that this the forms, if you look at them, they all seem to be this copy and paste style form where the legal language and whatnot is all the same. And then the only things differing from each is just the name and address of the voter being challenged. And they're saying, you know, this statute for challenging a mail ballot application is supposed to be based on personalized information that you know about the voter that makes them ineligible, not this kind of mass-produced thing that we have going on here.
And how could this impact the outcome of the election? I mean, Pennsylvania is a crucial state, as we know, and we've been saying, and all polls seem to indicate that it's deadlocked right now and that it could come down to just a few thousand votes. Does this have an impact there?
Yeah, I think at this point it's safe to say anything could have an impact in Pennsylvania, just given how close it's looking. You know, we don't know exactly how many ballots this is right now, because like I said, this is the applications for ballots that are being challenged. The deadline to return ballots is tomorrow, and the overseas voters have actually a couple of days after that to get their ballots back. So exactly how many votes this will involve remains to be seen. But, you know, in a race as tight as it is right now, I think that's why people are particularly concerned about making sure every vote counts.
If you're just joining us, we're speaking to Carter Walker, the Pennsylvania reporter for VoteBeat. VoteBeat is the nonprofit news organization reporting on voting access and election administration across the U.S. Carter, we've had you on several times during this election season, and where are we with other challenges or other court cases? Can you give us a status update?
Yeah, well, it finally looks like we are out of the woods for pre-election day litigation. And now that I've said that, I'm sure there'll be a new case filed today.
Right.
On Friday, the U.S. Supreme Court, you'll recall one of the cases we've been talking about is a challenge to the validity of provisional ballots cast by voters who make a mistake on their mail ballots. The PA Supreme Court said those ballots should be counted. Republicans appealed to the U.S. Supreme Court under this legal theory that has yet to be fully tested in the U.S. Supreme Court. And the U.S. Supreme Court was basically like, this is from a primary many months ago. It was only two ballots. It was only one county. And it's so close to an election where they basically just said, we're not going to deal with this right now. It's too small potatoes. There was the other case that we were still keeping an eye on, which is one I was particularly worried about, and I think a lot of people in the state were paying attention to, was a case in state courts, again, a new one dealing with mail ballot dating. After the Philadelphia special elections in September, the ACLU had again tried to invalidate the dating requirement under a provision of the state constitution. They were successful at the Commonwealth Court level, and then, but it was a little unclear once the Commonwealth Court ruled, like, does this only apply to Philadelphia? Does it only apply to the special election and not the November general election? And the Commonwealth Court did say those things in its decision, but counties were just still a little unsure about how to handle this new information. And on Friday, the PA Supreme Court issued an order clarifying that this lower court decision only applied to Philadelphia in the special election. So it's not going to change the rules for tomorrow. So basically, that is it. I mean, there is still one pending court case that we've talked about out of Western PA on if counties need to notify voters when they're going to reject their mail ballots. But, you know, the election is tomorrow at this point. We haven't seen a decision on it. So the period of time when that would really make a difference, that a voter is notified ahead of time that their ballot's going to be rejected, it's kind of passed at this point because the ballots are due tomorrow. So we'll probably not see a decision on that one until after the election.
So ballots tomorrow, the election, what do you think we'll know from Pennsylvania when polls close at 8 tomorrow night, or will we?
I think it's just tough to say. You know, it's going to come down to turnout, which is the vibe is that it's going to be high again this year. And if things are as close as polls suggest, you know, it might take a while to know the results. I certainly don't think we're going to be knowing them at 8 p.m. tomorrow night or in the hour or two after that. That would seem highly unlikely. You know, it still could take into Wednesday or Thursday if the results are really close and we have to count every single one of these mail ballots before making a call. The mail ballots will obviously, of course, all get counted eventually, but it matters how close the margin of the race is. So we're just going to have to wait and see.
Anything in particular you've got your eye on for tomorrow?
Yeah, you know, I'm going to be keeping my eye on, generally, there's little problems that pop up every single election. You know, somebody oversleeps and they forget to open their polling place, and then that goes viral online with people claiming voter suppression. In 2022, we saw just somebody online make up out of thin air that a judge had ordered that ballots could be returned, mail ballots could be returned several days after the election. Not true whatsoever. So as I'm traveling around two counties watching their mail ballot operation, I'm also going to be keeping an eye out for that kind of disinformation popping up throughout the day.
All right. Carter Walker will be in touch this week. He's the Pennsylvania reporter for Vote Beat. Thank you so much, Carter.
Thank you.
We'll take a break. And when we come back, One Small Step, the initiative that's trying to bring people together across the political divides. We need it now more than ever, it seems. This is Radio Catskill.
Support for Radio Catskill comes from Jeff Works Office Solutions, located right on Main Street in Jeffersonville, New York. A newly renovated pet-friendly office space that rents by the day, week, or month. With hot desks, sound-insulated rooms, Wi-Fi, modern amenities, and 24-hour secure access. Online at jeffworksjayville.com. And from The Cooperage Project, thecooperageproject.org. And listeners like you who donate at wjffradio.org.
We are in the final stretch of this historic election season. Former President Trump and Vice President Harris are making their last big push before it all comes to a head on November 5th. I'm Scott Detrow. Join us for live special coverage of Election Night 2024 from NPR News. We will bring you the latest as the polls close and the vote totals roll in, with the context and analysis you need to stay informed.
NPR's Election Night coverage starts at 7 tomorrow with local and regional updates throughout the night only on Radio Catskill.
Welcome back to Radio Catskill. I'm Tim Bruno. One Small Step is the initiative we've been telling you about, our partnership with StoryCorps that brings strangers with different political beliefs together for a conversation, not to debate politics, thank goodness, but to get to know each other as people. Today, we're going to hear from two folks who participated in this initiative here at Radio Catskill, Camille and Brett, and they're both here. Well, Camille is here in person, and Brett is joining us on the phone from South Africa. Good morning.
Good morning. Good afternoon for me.
An afternoon for you. Thank you both for being here. And also, I have Isabel Braverman and Ronald Kelson here from our team from One Small Step. Good morning.
Hi, good morning.
Hey, Isabel, remind folks again what this initiative is meant to do. I kind of briefly mentioned it there.
Sure. So One Small Step is a part of StoryCorps. It's a national initiative, like you said, to bring two people with differing political beliefs together to have a recorded conversation that we record here right in the studio. We could also do it online if people want. And it's really a way to bring our community together for people to share their stories and meet someone that they otherwise might have never met. And we have to record 25 of these conversations, and we have until the end of the year to do so. So we're still looking for people to sign up if you're interested.
Well, and we'll hear from two folks who did sign up. Camille, tell us why you decided to participate in this.
Oh, I was very happy to. Being very involved in the political scene and seeing how divided it's become, I thought this was a great opportunity for people to see maybe pass the letters next to their name and actually see people for the diverse and, you know, distinct people they are. Very complicated versus one letter.
Brett, did you feel the same way?
Yes, definitely. And I think also I talk and write a lot about listening and the importance of listening to other people. So I thought I better put my money where my mouth is, and here's an opportunity to listen. So, you know, if I'm going to talk about listening, I should do it as well. So that was a motivation for me as well.
And I just want to ask you, Brett, also from your background, you're South African, you live locally, you happen to be in South Africa now. But what was it about that perspective that brought you into wanting to talk to someone here from a different background as well?
I don't know. I guess, you know, in South Africa, we went through a transition period, right, where we transitioned to democracy, and we had political parties that had been very opposed to one another. There was a lot of literal war going on inside the country, you know, people and conflict. And so I think that to me was an example of politicians from very different backgrounds and views getting together, you know, in the with their differences, but really putting those secondary to the good of the country. And I think that was an amazing example for me.
Camille?
I completely can understand that. And actually, having been in the Senate and Assembly chambers and having met a lot of these elected officials and seeing very nice and very not nice people on both sides, sometimes it's difficult to talk about how there are good people and we can get good work done and not go the way of maybe the way some countries and some peoples have in the past. And that doesn't necessarily mean one party or the other, but actually talking to each other and coming to compromise. And sometimes it's not even much of a compromise. It's just seeing that we actually agree on something mm-hmm. if we look past these little details.
And you mentioned the state house and government. You work, your background is in local and state government here in New York.
Oh, yes. So I currently work as a staffer in the state Senate for the second senator. I formerly worked for an assemblyman. I was actually he was a Democrat, so I've worked on both sides of the aisle. He was the assistant speaker of the assembly, and I was his chief of staff. So I've was very high up in there. And that's where coming across the aisle was a big deal for me. And a lot of people didn't understand why I did it. So it is more in the details of it, and it's not the surface, the national reasons most people would think.
Okay, we have a clip from your conversation. Let's take a listen to it. It's Camille and Brad. We were talking to participants in the One Small Step program, the initiative here at Radio Catskill.
Could you briefly describe, in your own words, your personal political views?
Very liberal. I believe in democracy, social justice. You know, I believe everyone should basically be able to belong and be able to thrive in the society. I believe in a balance between sort of individual liberty and rights and sort of the community, right? So I think you don't want to go too far towards individual rights, because I think that can sort of, the selfishness is not helpful. So I think some kind of balance between autonomy and then community and connectedness, which I think is important.
I'm a Republican, and the reason I came across weren't for the classic reasons, and on both sides I've gotten grief for it. I recently ran a Republican primary, and everybody was saying that I was a Democrat, and the Democrats were saying I was a Republican, and because I do find myself a little bit of both. And that's where a lot of people want me to try and fit into a box, but I just want to be me.
Is there any kind of different situation that you would envision where it's easier to kind of be yourself and not having to fit into kind of one box or another?
Yeah, I daydream about it all the time.
Meeting you, it's very different from hearing about someone who, you know, is a Republican or is a politician or whatever. You know, it just is very different talking to someone in person and realizing the complexity of your background and how you feel and your beliefs. And you know, I think it's actually been quite moving, I think, to have this conversation.
Was there a food here that you tried that you had never had before?
Now we'll get into real disagreements, you know.
Oh, no, please.
American, you know, growing up in South Africa, I knew this idea of Americans and hamburgers. I was so disappointed when I first had my American hamburger because yeah. it was like a piece of meat and a dry roll. And it was like, what is this? You know, so.
Did you guys have hamburgers?
Yeah, we did. And they're much better. I mean,
yeah, no, thank you. And if we ever get the opportunity, I do make a really good hamburger.
Okay, great.
Yeah, I would love to share that. Yeah,
great. That would be wonderful. Thank you very much. This has been fantastic to get to know you.
Yeah, it's been very nice meeting you.
That's Camille and Brett, who are participated in the One Small Step program, part of StoryCorps and Radio Catskill, really got down to the issues there. The hamburger. Did you have a chance to make that hamburger for Brett yet?
Not yet. Brett, maybe when you come back from South Africa.
Sounds like a deal.
Brett, I wanted to ask you, you guys recorded this a few months ago here at the studios. There's been so much rhetoric in this election season. I'm wondering, did you take something out of this that helped, you know, reshape your views as you kind of see how this election is unfolding?
Yeah, you know, I've been thinking about this a lot since the conversation because it really is a struggle, right, to reconcile. You know, I met this person, this very complex person who I thought we clicked. I liked her. Mm-hmm. And also my ideas of what a certain political party is doing right now, right? And so it's not easy to kind of balance those. But I think that's the point of this, right? It's to say, to complicate things and say it's not easy to put people, you know, put a label on someone and put them in a box. When you meet a person, it suddenly becomes much more complicated and confusing. And that dissonance, I think, is really important to get us to think more deeply and say, well, how do I grapple with this person who identifies with this label that I think is terrible or I disagree with right now, whatever it might be? So I don't think it's easy, but I think it's necessary and really important. And I think to me, the thing I think is really important is not only what someone believes or what they do, but why. And the reasons are often very complicated and very surprising and not what, you know, we might think. And I think that is, to me, a core of listening, is to try and understand why people do the things they do and think the way they do, because that's the start of a much deeper and more interesting and more, you know, conversation with much more potential, I think.
Camille, you had said you dream about it every day, meaning I think that, and I don't want to put words in your mouth, but not to be labeled by these boxes or letters.
Well, absolutely. You know, both sides are a spectrum. A lot of things are spectrums and get labeled. And in other areas of my life, I kind of buck certain labels. And when it comes to politics, there is a full spectrum on both sides. And I've seen it on both sides, and I've been on different parts of the spectrum on both sides. Being towards the middle is not favored on either side, as it might be. But yeah, in our conversation, we talked a lot about third, fourth, fifth parties, parliament, and other options. You know, I was at the FDR Presidential Library, and in his numbers, and that's not that long ago in the broad scheme of things, there were a bunch of other parties that had presidential candidates, and they got a fair amount of votes. And seeing that, it was like, wow, how did we get so far from that?
I'm going to put you both on the spot for a second here. On the eve of the election, what would you say to some of the folks who might be listening that are still on these polarized sides of the parties or election or however you want to phrase it, Brett?
For me, I think, as I said, I think this is, you know, something I'm still grappling with. But I think an important thing is to separate the leaders from people who identify with or support a particular party. Because I think, you know, I have a particular view about the, you know, the presidential candidate, but let's not go into that right now.
No.
But I think that's different from who's actually making the decisions about the people who actually have to make a decision about who to support, because that, as Camille said, that's complicated and much more important. And you know, people might need different spaces to find themselves in. So I would say, as we go and think about this division that there, really, I think we have to engage with people as people that we live with in communities, and why they may support something that we're fundamentally opposed to. How do we have to figure out a way to live together, because that's what democracy is really all about, and figure out a way to live in community together. Because that is democracy. If we're going to give that up, then we give up democracy.
Camille, I'll ask you this.
I couldn't agree more. Looking at each race, each person as the person. And, you know, sometimes we get into these pack mentalities that I very much think everybody's vote is their own, and that's the purpose of democracy, for everybody to vote their way and see where we can all agree. We've always said in the chambers, say it with your vote. But do some introspection, see what issues are most important to you, and then look at the candidates and see who they are, not just at the top of the ticket, but all the way down. I mean, I was surprised recently, somebody, a local Republican, is a vegan. And you don't hear that very often. And it was a very good conversation we had about food. I like talking about food.
No hamburgers for him.
No.
She makes a good Impossible Burger, I understand, too. Isabel, we only heard a clip here. Can folks hear the full conversation?
Yeah. So every conversation is 50 minutes long, and anyone can listen to the full recordings on the StoryCorps website, which is linked on our WJFF website.
And we're going to have a listening party coming up soon. Tell folks about that.
Yeah, it's on December 8th, which is a Sunday, from 2 to 4 p.m. at the Arnold House in Livingston Manor. The community is invited. You'll get to hear from some of the participants, like Brett and Camille, as well as a few others. You'll hear our selected edited pieces, and people will talk about their experience participating in One Small Step.
And then you'll get a chance to meet all these other people who participated too and bring this community together. That's what this whole initiative is about. One conversation at a time. So this was one of them with Camille and Brett. Thank you guys both so much for doing this and for being here to talk to us about it.
Absolutely. Anytime.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
All right. And there's
take
more.
Take care, Brett.
Take care, Brett. Thank you. And there's more information at wjffradio.org. We'll take a break, and when we come back, local economic perspective from James B. Huntington. This is Radio Chatsco.
Nobody likes a boaster. And yet, when we achieve a goal or score a personal victory, the temptation to trumpet our news can be overwhelming.
You have a big accomplishment. The first thing, you know, you feel this incredible surge of pride. The first thing that we all want to feel is, how do I make this bigger? How do I keep this going?
The fine line between pride and arrogance, this week on Hidden Brain from NPR. Today at 1 on Radio Catskill.
I'm Stephen Dubner. On the next Freakonomics Radio, is America switching from booze to weed?
I think if everyone who was using alcohol was instead using cannabis, it would be a much safer, healthier world.
But has the legalization of cannabis outpaced the research?
No one has studied the majority of products that are out there today.
That's next time on Freakonomics Radio. Tuesday at 1 p.m. on Radio Catskill.
Welcome back to Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. Well, it's Monday, and we get to hear from James B. Huntington with some local economic perspective from a local author, a local economist, James B. Hi, good morning.
Good morning, Tim. Good morning, listeners.
All right, so we got a lot to get to. Let's jump into it. What happened with last week's jobs report, and what does it mean?
Well, the big news was the number of net new non-farm payroll positions, a.k.a. jobs, was up only 12,000, which didn't even approach the 100,000 to 115,000 published estimates. It's not surprising, generally attributed to strikes and storms. So we have seasonally adjusted and unadjusted unemployment, both staying the same at 4.1 and 3.9%. The number of people unemployed was up 200,000 to 7 million. Of them, 1.6 million were long-term or without work for 27 weeks or longer. That's down 100,000. People working part-time for economic reasons or holding short-hours positions while seeking full-time ones stayed at 4.6 million. The two measures of how common it is for Americans to be working or officially unemployed, the labor force participation rate and the employment population ratio, both got worse, down to 62.6% and 60% for 0.1% and 0.2% declines. We have private non-farm payroll wages still going up a little more than inflation, 10 cents an hour to 35.46. We have the American Job Shortage Number, or AJSN, showing latent demand for how many additional positions could be filled if everyone knew they'd be easy to get. That fell 736,000, mostly on a lower estimate of how many Americans are now expatriates. So overall, taking one more thing into account, and that's the look at how many people left or entered the workforce, we have almost 500,000 more people claim no interest in a job and 219,000 overall not in the labor force. That explains really why unemployment stayed the same instead of going up. But we have October's deficiency really may well reverse itself next time, but for now, it was a poor month.
So it's kind of an unclear picture of where the labor market is headed, but what about the overall economic growth and inflation?
Well, inflation, we have down to 2.1% in September compared with everything. Now it's 2.7% if we exclude food and fuel costs. But it is coming way down. It's very close to the 2.0% the Fed wanted to see. As far as the growth of the economy. It was 2.8% in an annual rate in the third quarter. That's a little slower than expected, but it's still quite robust and nothing to take for granted. We are growing our economy and our country, and that is not at all the norm among other first world prosperous places.
And so how much did the economy grow in the third quarter?
Well, 2.8% on an annual rate, so it was probably about 0.6 or 0.7%.
And then what is the latest with the job report here? What's the latest on job openings?
Okay, job openings hit a 3.5-year low to 774,000. I'm sorry, 7.443 million, and that is quite low. It's from the JOLTS, the Job Openings and Labor Turnover Survey, which comes out every month. I have never taken seriously the number of job openings because it does not show how many positions are available as it is supposed to, but it's still noteworthy as something going down. And what that means is that when the Fed meets this week, Federal Reserve meeting on the 6th and 7th, and they announce any interest rate changes on Thursday the 7th at 2 p.m., they will probably reduce them. They have wanted to, but with the jobs, with the numbers we've seen, with the lack of new jobs last month and the lower job openings, it's all pointing to certainly no overheating situation with employment right now. It may be okay, it may be a little worse than that, but whatever it is, it's nothing, no reason to keep interest rates as high as they are. So almost certainly, I would think the Federal Reserve will knock another quarter point off of those.
And so we think that they're going to cut rates again, most likely. Does the election have any impact on that, or do you think they made up their mind by now? How does that kind of work?
Well, that would not affect the interest rate decision, but that certainly may affect the stock market and other things. We don't really know how anything is going to react. Sometimes the reactions are surprising. Sometimes it drops a great deal when they don't like the candidate and then gains it all back in a day or two when they think better of the long-term prospects, or it could be the other way around.
So more likely the election outcome would impact the Fed's future actions about who's new president or who's got control of Congress.
Probably not. It's not supposed to. I mean, they're supposed to be apolitical. I don't think they're sitting there thinking that one candidate would make it more or less dangerous to cut interest rates. It's going to depend on the data they have using the sources I mentioned and others. They don't know. They never know. They can never say for sure that they're going to cut interest rates in December or in the meeting after that or so on. It's going to depend on what they have in front of them now, and we know what they're going to have in front of them. So it's not going to change, and the election, they will not let the election color their decision.
So with all of this data and all of these things happening, swirling around, what's the overall state of the economy then?
Well, I have a whole bunch of charts here. I can quickly summarize from you how the data, the misery index, which is inflation plus unemployment, has reached a local low at 6.5%. These charts are all from about 1970, and most of the time, for like about 80% of the time, the misery index has been higher during that range. It spiked around COVID, the early year or so of the pandemic, and otherwise not much problem. Poverty rate has been dropping since 1970 almost consistently. It was down substantially. It was down to about 8% from about 23%. Now it's 10.5%, so it's still with some with some peaks and some ups and downs, it shows a real decline over time. Violent crime, the homicide rate was 8% in 1970 and more than that for the next two decades most of the time. It dropped substantially in the late 1990s, and since then it's been sort of wiggling around, but now it's close to a 50-year low at 4.7%. Life expectancy has been on a general increase, a slow, steady increase. It dropped. It took a healthy hit when COVID started killing people, but since then it's been going back up. That's up from about 70% in 1970 to 79.3% in the most recent year of 2023. Happiness, how about that? We've got a chart for that by a well-regarded survey. It wiggles around. It was higher generally, though, in the 90s and the aughts, and went up and went down with the pandemic. It's been rising since. It's at 79%, when in the early 70s it was about 82, so not much change there. We have GDP is up 321% since 1970. Otherwise, we have women's rights up significantly, perception anyway, since 1970 from about, the index has gone up substantially. Then the democracy index is also up a lot, really, since 1970. So everything really says that we're doing well. It's not and every year is better than the previous year sort of thing. Probably never will be, but it's looking very good as far as how our economy is actually going.
All right. Well, lots of charts there. There's probably an anxiety index somewhere for where we are currently.
Yes, I'm sure there is. And they didn't include it in the article, but I'm sure you could put that together.
Let's talk about where things are numbers-wise. How's the stock market doing, and how did things change?
Okay, over the past week, and these are as of very early this morning, gold $2,741 plus $8. It's been creeping up, but it's $30 or $40 short of its all-time high. Silver $32.76 dropped 71 cents. The ratio is about 84 to 1, which, with the changes in India, probably is about the right ratio over time. So silver may have been a little overpriced for a while there. The Dow Jones Industrial Average, 42,052, dropped 62 points, which was a relief. It went up on Friday, but it was looking like another awful week. We did survive it. NASDAQ, 18,240, down 279. Mostly it's just been hanging around. It has not been losing. In fact, it went up last week when the Dow dropped 1,100. So it's nothing really to worry about. There is more volatility with perceptions about AI and other things. Oil, West Texas Intermediate, 71.26, down almost, or up rather, up about $3. And it went up at the pumps too, I've been noticing as I'm driving around. My local station went from 329 to 299 to 329. So you may be seeing that too. Bitcoin, 68,807, which is up 561. Again, they're so volatile that doesn't mean a lot. It is encouraging. It's good to see that is going up, and Bitcoin did better than anything this week. British pound, $1.2963, down 11 hundredths. Nothing really noteworthy there. The euro, though, went up 1.0893, about 8 tenths of a cent. The Japanese 100 yen coin rebounded a penny and is now at 66 cents. Overall, much more tumult may happen this week. We have the Fed may not consider who wins the election tomorrow or whenever it's called, but investors certainly do, and they're not all in agreement, but often the great majority of them will be buying or selling the same thing. So look out.
Look out. All right. James B. Huntington with Local Economic Perspective. We're going to miss you for a few weeks. You're going to be away. We've got Veterans Day next week, so we'll check in with you, I guess, what, toward the end of the month?
Yes, I'll be back on December 2nd.
All right,
great 4 weeks.
All right. You'll have lots of charts and info to check in on. James B. Huntington, local economist, local author, joining us with Local Economic Perspective. Thank you, James B.
Thank you, Tim. Thank you, listeners.
All right, we'll take a quick break and back with more Radio Chatskill.
I'm Jason Dole. Stick with Radio Catskill for special election night coverage tomorrow. Join me, Patricio Rubio, and Philip Pantuso of the Times Union, Carter Walker of Vote Beat PA, and Liam Mayo and Ruby Rayner from the River Reporter. Tomorrow evening at 6 for the local edition's live election night special. Then NPR special coverage starts at 7, and we'll keep checking in with our live guests, including Ian Pickus of WAMC News and Laura Flanders. It's election night on Radio Catskill.
This week on the Retro Cocktail Hour, we'll hear the new exotic sounds of the Blue Zombies and Cloud 11, plus a brand new album by Herb Alpert. I'm Daryl Brogdon. Come join me where the music is always shaken, not stirred. The Retro Cocktail Hour. Wednesday night at 7, here on Radio Catskill.
This is Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. The Election Day Soup Fest was sponsored by the Calicoon Kiwanis and the Literacy Partners of Sullivan West. It was an annual soup fest held at the same location at the polling place in the town of Delaware, Election District Number 1. Unfortunately, the Calicoon Kiwanis had to announce the cancellation of the Election Day Soup Fest this year due to some new regulations from the Sullivan County Board of Elections. We wanted to remind you of what the Soup Fest was and provide you a little lightness in this heavier time heading into the election.
Well, I'm Julie Pizzal. We're at the Calicoon Youth Center where they have the election, and we're with the Kiwanis Club, and we have our soup festival.
What's a soup festival? The space has seats in the middle where folks are eating soup, and then the whole place is ringed by tables full of crock pots.
That's right. We have about 27 different soups. The Kiwanis Club members make the soups. All the restaurants make the soups. And we have, some people have their favorites. You can come down, you can sit down, all for $10, and try every soup if you want. Stay all day, try all the soups, and it comes with rolls and dessert. And if you want takeout, they're 3 for $10, including the rolls and dessert.
I was just going to ask because I can't stay all day, so I was hoping there's a takeout option.
That's right. And some people come and they try them. If they like them, they take them home for dinner, too.
Great.
Kiwanis Club, they have the literacy partners in with the Kiwanis Club. And all of the proceeds today go to buy books for every elementary student, pre-K through 6th grade, at the school. So that's where all this money will go. And twice a year, actually next week, all the kids can go and pick out a book at the school.
Wow, that's great. Okay, cool. So here's the hardest question I'm going to ask you, right? What's your favorite?
Well, I happen to like them all, but I like the lobster bisque. And I got to say, the Villa Roma makes delicious lobster bisque.
Wow.
But all the restaurants make good soup. And Fred Stabber, he makes the best clam chowder. That's very popular, too, the Manhattan clam chowder. Everybody has their favorite. There's a seafood chowder people like, too.
Wow.
So, and we're here till all the soups are sold out or 7 o'clock, whichever comes first, 11 to 7.
Well, thanks for taking the time to talk to us, and best of luck.
Thank you very much.
Okay, I got to get some soups to go, so I'm going to walk around real quick and tell you what soups we got here. Sausage and tortellini, compliments of Job Corps. Lentil kale, compliment of Ollie Gray's. That one's vegan. The sausage kale of Rafter's Tavern. Another vegan lentil, the Calicoon Creek House. I love this table. We got cheddar broccoli, spinach soup, and broccoli cheddar. And that one's compliments of Peck's. sweet potato ginger curry, which, oh, that sounds good. Compliments of the Calcoon Brewery. Lobster bisque from the Villa Roma. Chicken Thai. Do you know where that came from?
No, but it's good.
Okay. Ukrainian mushroom soup. Ham and potato. Chicken soup. Pea soup. Chicken noodle. Butternut squash. Black bean soup. Hamburger soup. Manhattan clam chowder. Chicken orzo. Vegan vegetable. Chili. And a seafood chowder that you can smell clear across the room, but Julie says it's popular.
Okay, now that we know all the soups that are available, the real question is, what do people think of the soups? The voters, Kiwanis volunteers, passers-by, do they like the soup?
Definitely. It's delicious. I've had some myself, and every time I've sampled it, it's top-notch.
What's your favorite?
Oh, I like the broccoli cheddar.
Hey, Jason, how are you?
How you doing? Good. Did you get some soup?
I have not seen what's available here yet, but usually there's more than I can handle.
So you've done this before?
I have. I came last year, and I was, pardon the pun, bowled over.
I'll pardon it.
Okay. I couldn't believe the different kinds of soup there were and how good each one was. This is homemade soup. It's the best stuff.
Well, I wish you luck in choosing your soup du jour.
Oh, I'm not going to choose. I'm going to take one of each. I will. I promise.
There you go. That's the way to do it. Thanks.
Yeah, it's good to see you.
I'm going to take mine home and freeze it.
Cindy Mangus and the Thai chicken curry was the best.
Oh, my gosh. I almost got that, but I had to go with the Ukrainian mushroom, and that filled my last slot.
Fabulous. Really good. But everything was really good.
Have you ever done the soup festival here before?
I have.
Sure.
So is this something you were looking forward to?
Sure, of course. Yeah. Got to come vote and have some soup.
I had almost all of them, and every one of them was just as delicious as the last one.
So you can't pick a favorite?
I can't.
Can you pick a top three?
The sweet potato curry, butternut squash, and lobster bisque.
So you like kind of a richer, creamier soup.
Yeah, and it's all good, all for a good cause.
Thank you so much for talking.
You're welcome. God bless.
Okay, so that was the scene at the Soup Festival on Election Day at the Delaware Youth Center in Calicoon, but that was not the only polling place that had soup available. I stopped by my own polling place, White Sulphur Springs Fireman's Hall, and talked to Dennis Day about their long-running Election Day clam chowder sale.
This is probably our sixth or seventh annual clam chowder takeout election day. We do 35 gallons, 140 quarts, and we generally sell out before noon, and it's very delicious, best in the West.
So, how do you make 35 gallons of clam chowder?
Very carefully. Very carefully, because it's very expensive to make, and you can't let anything go wrong. So it takes us all day on Monday. Actually, some we start on Sunday and then serve it on Tuesday. We do it as a fundraiser for the firemen, for the fire department.
How?
Auxiliary also has a bake sale, cookies and cakes and all kinds of good stuff. So,
well, that's great. And I didn't want to get into any hot political issues here, but I do got to ask, is it Manhattan or New England?
Oh, it's always New England. It's got to be New England.
That answered that question.
And a reminder, thanks to Jason Dole for that report from last year, a reminder that the White Sulphur Springs Fire Department is still having their annual clam chowder soup sale tomorrow, and their Ladies Auxiliary is hosting their bake sale at that polling location in White Sulphur. But unfortunately, the Calicoon Kiwanis Club's annual soup fest has been canceled. They're still looking for support, though, because it's the largest fundraiser for literacy volunteers at Sullivan West. You can get more information on their Facebook page. And you can get more election coverage here tomorrow night. We'll begin our election coverage at 6 with a special hour-long local edition, and followed by NPR's special election night coverage with additional local perspective throughout the evening. And you can hear all of our latest information and read all of our latest information about the election at our website, wjffradio.org. I'm Tim Bruno. Thanks for listening. Don't forget to vote.
Radio Catskill supporters include the Sterling Business and Technology Park, located at Exit 17 on Interstate 84 in Northeast Pennsylvania, offering opportunities to locate or expand businesses on property zoned for manufacturing and other uses. More information at sterlingbusinesspark.com. And listeners like you who donate at WJFFradio.org.
Truth, independence, fairness, transparency, respect, excellence. NPR. Donate. Thanks.
Give now at WJFFradio.org.
WJFF Jeffersonville, streaming live at WJFFradio.org. Today's weather, times of sun and clouds, a warm-up on the way. High 52 today, tonight cloudy, low 40. But tomorrow, Election Day, partly sunny and warmer, and a high of 68, 67 on Wednesday. It's 11 o'clock.